Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, you guys are tuned in to another episode of The Real with Sage Single Moms. Today's topic is when the other parent dies. This is going to be a heavy discussion because death is just heavy, but it is real life. It is what happens, so we got to talk about it. For those of you that don't know my voice, this is Hershey, me, your girl, the single mom sage herself, Miss Jennifer Pink, coming to you live once again. If you've never listened to our podcast, let me let you know The Real with Sage Single Moms is a show for you and by you. This show is for single moms, no matter what stage of your life you are in, whether you are just now becoming a single mom, whether you're an old-time vet and your kids are grown and out the house. We have something for you on our podcast. We talk about any and everything that is the single mom life. And, of course, we are always talking about how to thrive spiritually, emotionally, physically, financially, and while raising them babies. So with me tonight, I have two amazing guests, Rhonda Braden and Keisha. Rhonda Braden is a single mother of six. Did y'all hear that? Six children. After the death of her husband 20 years ago, she picked up her life and raised the children with support from her parents, siblings, and mom and sister in love. She has five awesome grandchildren with whom she loves to spend her free time. Rhonda is an advocate for grandparents and their participation, interaction, and the lives of their grandchildren. Rhonda has been a billing payroll specialist for 20-plus years with a medical staffing agency. Rhonda has also received her associate's degree from St. Louis Community College and is working towards obtaining her bachelor's in business administration. Rhonda is an active member in her local church as well as on the state level, assisting with record keeping, health unit, and usher board. Rhonda is also an excellent virtual business assistant and provides outstanding service to entrepreneurs from various industries. Say hello, Rhonda.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you, Jennifer, for having me here.
Oh, no problem. We're excited to get into this topic with you. And also with us is Keisha. Keisha is a devoted wife and mother of four. That's two bios and two bonus babies, three girls and one boy, whom she adores and enjoys being a mother to. She has always had a special place in her heart for women. Being able to relate to women on so many levels gives her a perspective that is truly unique. She has recently founded the Super Womanly blog in September of 2017 that inspires and provides advice to women, which is truly her passion. Hello, Miss Keisha.
Hello, hello, everyone.
Well, thank you, both you ladies, for joining us. I kind of told a little bit of Rhonda's story in her bio, but Rhonda, you know, why don't you give our audience a little taste of your story? What happened?
Well, it's not a nice story to tell, but my husband was into bets, and he decided that he bet some people who he called his friend, and as his wife, I told him or tried to tell him a lot that everybody wasn't always his friend, and he just, you know, got to the point where, you know, everybody was his friend. So he actually, they bet him that he couldn't drink a fifth or a gallon of some kind of liquor, and he drank it. And, you know, based on autopsy and stuff, they say that it was alcohol poisoning because he had so much alcohol in his system. But what actually happened was he smothered himself. He suffocated himself to death because he fell asleep with his face in the pillow and he was too intoxicated to wake up. So, fortunately, nobody was at the house when it happened, so we didn't have to you know, the kids didn't have to experience that or anything, which is a good thing. I'm pretty sure that it would have affected them a whole lot differently than just finding out that he was dead. So, I mean, I really didn't share with them how he died until they were older, because my youngest had just turned 3. Well, he was 3 and a half, and the oldest was about 10. So I had to wait until they were all a little in their teen years before we really discussed it. So it affected, I think, my youngest son and my middle daughter the most. So they were trying to, you know, they wanted to have a dad so bad, and it was just, you know, with me having the 6 kids and trying to work, I really didn't have time to worry about trying to find anybody to spend any other time with, because with working and trying to take care of 6 kids, and you can only imagine how many different personalities there were with 6 children. So it was, it was just really hard to try to even include anybody else in this picture. So, but we survived it. Everybody's grown now. They're out doing their own thing, all successful, which is what any single mom, the only thing any single mom can ask for is that they go out and take care of themselves and do the right things for themselves. So
right,
that's it in a nutshell.
Definitely. And when you say 6 different personalities, I get it. I have 4, and I'm like, who made all you people? Like,
right.
Why are you so different? Can't you act alike so I can know what's going on? But I get it. I get it. Now, Keisha, you're coming from the totally. Wait, what'd you say?
I said, and those teenagers are crazy.
Don't get me started. I have one of those right now. And she's a girl,
mm-hmm.
And when you are raising a teen girl and you are a woman, that's not even funny, Jesus.
You just see yourself a lot, that's all.
I wrote a blog post talking about I can't parent myself.
Well,
this is a problem.
That's
I'm going to need somebody to come fix this. I'm telling you. But, Keisha, I know you're coming from the completely other side of the spectrum. I don't want to give it away, so why don't you tell everybody how you fit into this conversation?
Well, my husband and his children, they lost his wife and their mother. He came home. Well, she called him from work one day, and she got really sick. She had high blood pressure. She would get sick from time to time. So he offered to take her to the hospital. She declined. She just wanted to go home and rest. And she thought she was feeling better. And then when he came home to his unfortunate, she was just there on the floor, and she had already passed away. It was just very devastating for their entire family, you know, the children. No one, they didn't see her, while she was had passed like that. But, you know, just the whole night, you know, I just can only imagine it was just simply just traumatic and chaotic. And then we met, and when you're coming into a situation like that, you don't really know what you're coming into, because you think, okay, they say they're ready, and you're just like, okay. And it was, it was definitely challenging. He has an older daughter, she's 19 now, and a younger son. Well, I like to call them, they're all my babies. But our oldest is 19 and our son is 13. So, we just talk to them a lot and give them opportunities to express themselves, whenever they need to talk or, feel like they are going through something, especially our daughter, because she was 15 when their mother passed away. So that's like a age where, so much is happening and, you really depend on your mom for that. for all those things, and it was really, you know, I think a lot more difficult for her. And then boys are just different, you know, they don't always express themselves like girls do, so, you know, and then with him just being a boy and, you know, kind of quiet about it, he has his moments, and, you know, we'll have, like, little conversations, or he'll have conversations with his dad. But pretty much everybody is doing really well. You know, of course, we've had our challenges. But, you know, we're making it through.
Are you there, ladies?
I am here. I don't ask me. My phone is having issues for the day, but we're all right. I was saying, I definitely, you know, it's hard blending your family, period, you know, mm-hmm. but I can only imagine how much harder it is to blend when there's been a death, you know, and something
right.
as traumatic as a sudden death, you know, as in both of your cases.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I completely understand Rhonda, you know, saying, okay, look, I got 6 kids and I got to figure this out and choosing not to date and be like, look, I ain't got time for that. Maybe later. And then I also understand, you know, Keisha, your husband saying, I'm, you know, I love my wife, but
mm-hmm.
I've got to move on with my life at the end of the day. So I definitely
and
understand
that's what
both.
He constantly, you know, that's what he constantly said. And I did a lot of reading about, like, you know, how to date someone who had lost their spouse because it was just that much, you know, that I needed guidance. I was like, okay, I don't know, you know, what to do, but that's, you know, how he felt. He felt like he needed to move on, you know, and for some people that's hard to understand. And, you know, but from what I've read, you have to let the person who experienced it, let them move on and deal with it how they need to deal with it, as long
right.
as they're actually dealing with it.
That part. And I think, you know, we just have to be honest as women. Men deal with things a lot differently than
right
women do, you know. So for them, moving on and getting married again, it doesn't mean that I didn't love my wife. Whereas sometimes
right.
for women, they hold such a high place that you can't fill that void. And that's understandable as well, you know. And it just
mm-hmm.
I think it just depends on the person. But I want to say, you know, and I guess Rhonda can definitely speak a whole lot more to this part of it. Your kids, like, what did you notice, maybe not immediately, you know, but through the years, did you notice a significant impact because of the death of, you know, it's not like he's just missing or he stepped out of their life. Like, he's actually never coming back. So did you notice an impact, a great impact on them?
I don't think that it was a big impact. Like I said earlier, my youngest, he was always looking for a father figure. As he got a little older, he was maybe 13, between 12 and 15. He really wanted a dad, and it's like, dude, I have 6 of you. I don't have time to worry about trying to find a man who might be a good father figure for you. Once we got back into church, my former pastor really took him under his wings, you know, taught him a whole bunch of stuff, and so it was awesome. You know, how to tie his tie, make sure his pants are pulled up, put his belt on, things like that. So it was awesome. And then my dad still left, so they had him as a role model. And then I have 4 brothers. So it wasn't as bad, I think, as could have been having a presence at all. So then with my middle daughter, I'm not sure, you know, I never really understood what her issue was with her dad not being there, but she did go through for a while where she wanted her dad. You know, it was just like, I want my dad, I want my dad. And I'm like, baby, I'm not coming back. I don't know. You know, we can just, you know, I just pray with her and tell her that, you know, she will be okay. That if she needed, you know, the male advice or whatever, that her dad, my dad and her uncles were always there for her.
How old was
she?
So
I was happy. I'm actually was grateful to have them. So now, you know, when people finally find out that I have six kids, they're like, how did you do it? I'm like, it wasn't just me. You know, it was to start with with six kids, having to figure out how to do it myself. And, you know, when they got in high school, it was like, oh, my gosh. It was some in high school, some in middle school, some in elementary school. And it's like, well, there's only one of me, so I don't know how we're going to do everything that needs to be done today. So with parent-teacher conferences and stuff, it was, you know, hectic. I had to overlap those things and, you know, in high school, I wanted to do a different activity, and it's like, so practices and even whatever they were doing, I don't know, y'all, I just don't know. It's only one me, but we worked through it, and everybody, you know, everybody survived, so as bad as I could have been, you know, with the statistics that they have about women raising, single women raising male children. And so, again, none of them are abusive. Nobody's on drugs. Nobody's an alcoholic. Nobody's in a gang. Nobody's been in jail. None of that stuff. So it's like, you know, we kind of made it through, depended on each other a whole lot, you know. Now they love me. When they were growing up, they couldn't stand me. And I'm sure that's probably where you guys are now with your children. Mine are like, oh, Mom, I appreciate so much that you've done for me. And now, but it's like when they were growing up, they were like, oh, I just can't stand this lady, you know. And it wasn't that they said this. It was the way they acted, you know. They were never
It was the rolling of the eyes.
Honey. And the mumbling under the breath. Yes, ma'am. So it worked out, but other than that, other than those kinds of things, I never really had any issues with them. You know, as they got older, I did tell them, you know, I talked to them about their dad and stuff like that. And then his mom, we all live in the same city, so his mom is still alive. So they would talk to, you know, they talk to their grandmother. And when he died, my sister-in-law asked me, she said, whatever you do, please don't take my nieces and nephews away from me. And I had never been that kind of person anyway. Yeah, you know, family is like, if there's nothing else, there's family to me. I don't have to have anything else if I have them. And so I would never have taken them out of their lives because I feel like children need a support system. And you know, extra people are just, you know, more support.
All hands on deck.
Right, right. I was on the phone earlier with my grandson before I got on here, and we were doing multiplication problems. He lives in the same city with me, too. And so he's having problems with his multiplication. So I told him, I said, I'm going to call you every day, and we're going to do some math, okay? He's like, cool, you know, thinking it's a game. So I called him, then he's like, oh, Nana, you just asked me that yesterday. And I'm like, yep, and I'm going to call you tomorrow and ask you the same thing. So, you know, it's just we need the village, and the village to me is, like, totally important because if you don't have the village as a single parent, then what do you have? I mean, you know, who's going to help you if you got to go to the store or you get sick, you know? With little kids, if you don't have somebody, I don't know how you're going to make it.
Right, bro.
So it did work
out.
It is
the truth. It's the truth. I tell women all the time, you know, like, stop creating more problems by pushing people away, you know. And it,
yeah.
if you don't have any family where you live, build a village. Meet
right.
other single moms and work together. Like, you've got to, because you can't
yeah.
survive on your own. You know, pride and ego and all of that, let me help you understand that it will surely get you to ruin.
Yeah.
It's just not
yeah.
worth it.
It doesn't take long in the blink of an eye.
In the blink of an eye, definitely. Now, Keisha, coming from your perspective, you know, I mean, I've heard the stories of, you know, my grandparents, where my grandfather was married and his wife died and he had two kids, and then he married my grandmother, and she had to deal with not just these teenage children who she's now got to be a mother to, but she had to deal with his, you know, the wife's family, because they were very much involved, because they had become the village in her death, in her absence. So, you know, did you have to deal with a lot of her family, and was it easy or was it difficult? How did that process happen? Uh-oh. Did we lose Keisha?
I'm not sure.
Oh, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Oh, okay. In the beginning, it was really difficult. There were no boundaries. I think because they were so used to being all hands on deck and, you know, having a key and coming on in and cooking and cleaning and doing whatever needed to be done to help my husband. Well, before he was my husband, you know, come in and do whatever needs to be done. You know, he had a great support system, his mom and his children's grandmother, maternal grandmother. However, when we got married, you know, their grandmother, their maternal grandmother, sort of didn't really respect the boundaries, you know, would just come over. I would come out of my bedroom, and we were married at this point. I would come out, and she'd be, you know, just sitting in my living room. Not that I have a problem with her being here. She's always welcome. I just wanted a little heads up, like, oh, you're coming over? Okay, cool. Oh, you're, you know, dropping something off? Oh, you want to have a party? Okay, cool. So, you know, just let me know. Before you kind of just take over my home, you know. So it took a while to get those kind of kinks worked out. And I think, you know, in the moment, it just, you know, I felt it was just so disrespectful. I mean, like, I'm like, how do you just walk into somebody's house and not tell them? Like, I just didn't understand. Like, but over time, you know, many conversations and, you know, listening to my husband, because, you know, explaining to me that, you know, they're still grieving and, you know, things, you know, basically they were just not healing very well, or not in a place yet to accept it. And so, you know, I was trying to be considerate of that, but it was hard. It was really hard, because I felt a lot of times it was blatant, you know, and I was just, I don't know. I guess it was just really hard for me to deal with, you know. There was just no kind of respect. But like I said, over time it got much better. We talk now whenever they, you know, whenever she's coming by, you know, much more respectful. Just everything is kind of, all that madness is smoothed out now, and it's so much better, you know. I think the kids needed to see that too. Like, you know, there are still ways there's still rules and ways that you need to behave. You know, you can't act any kind of way because something happened to you. You know, you still have to, you know, respect people. You still have to be kind. You still have to be loving. You still have to be, you know, you still have to follow the rules. You can't just do anything you want to do just because, you know, something traumatic happened to you. So it was a good teaching and learning moment for everybody. But it was definitely difficult in the beginning.
I can imagine just that whole, like, you know, because, you know, like Rhonda said in her case, you know, everybody's pitching in and everybody's helping out and people are filling the void. And, you know, like she said about the sister saying, don't take them away from me. And, you know, when we think of single fathers, right, we immediately see the grandma and the aunties and, you know, all the female relatives kind of jumping in there because they're like, oh, you need help because, you know, you need a mother.
Right.
And then what happens when there's a shift and there is now a woman of the house, you know, and I could totally imagine. So I'm glad that you're honest about that because I think that that's something that we need to be honest about. We need to know.
Yeah.
It's going to be a process. And, you know, like I always tell women, just on blending families, it's a process. You are going to hit lots of bumps, lots of feels.
Yeah.
You're going to have days where you're like, yeah, no. Uh-uh.
Right.
I'm doing this. I got to go, you know. But if you're committed to it, you work through it.
Yeah, you know, and it took a lot of conversations, a lot of communication, and not always the most pleasant conversations. You know, some things were hard to hear. You know, I didn't always handle things the right way. He didn't always handle things the right way. The kids didn't always handle things. I mean, everybody was, you know, just trying to figure this all out. But it worked out. Like, you know, it is so amazing how strong and resilient kids are, you know, because, you know, they have their moments where they're crazy, you know, just crazy stuff, but they've also gone through something really traumatic. But they are really good kids. Like, they're good kids, you know. So it worked out.
I'm glad to hear that. At the end of the day, I'm so glad to hear that. So I guess, you know, this is kind of for both of you ladies. How did you have, I mean, I know, you know, you just, I mean, I guess you didn't really have the conversation, but you had a different conversation with them, Keisha. Like that conversation when you have to sit the kids down and, you know, for Rhonda, when you have to sit the kids down and say, Dad's gone. He's not coming back. And I know, you know, you said you didn't tell them all the details in the beginning because they were so young. And, you know, Keisha, when you guys had to sit down and say, okay, we're getting married. I'm moving in the house. You know, I'm not here to replace mommy, but I am the new mommy, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys handle that, you know, straightforward, let's just get right to it? Or, you know, was there a lot of tiptoeing and dancing around, or were you guys just like, I have no idea what to say, let's figure this out together?
This is for
Rhonda,
me, and this is Keisha. Oh, go ahead.
So,
well,
for me, as soon as we knew, I told them, and I try to make sure that big life events like that, I always tell them about. I don't like, even now, I don't like people to let them know things like that. I need to be the one to tell them because I know how they are, and what, you know, I can't just, like, pick up the phone and say, hey, your dad died, you know, even now. So you have to be able to talk to them and know that there may be an outburst. So if you're going to, you have to deal with it first, but you have to deal with it fast also, because the longer you wait to tell, to, you know, pass the information along, to me, the worse it is for you and for them. So, you know, I had to deal with it and say, okay, now I've dealt with it. Now I need to be strong for them. And so even at their age, when we went to the funeral, couldn't break down and cry because it was six of them and one of me. So if I break down, then I can't support them. And so it was just, you know, something that to me that I had to do right away. And so we did have the, you know, the crying and stuff, but because we did that prior to going to the funeral, I was able to console them and let them know that, you know, death is a part of life. You know, we're all going to have to deal with it at some point. And again, by me establishing the relationships with them that I did, any time they had an issue or felt like, you know, didn't feel good or were sad or whatever, you know, they could come to me and I would talk to them. We'd just have a conversation. And for me, prayer is everything. So anytime they were feeling sad, immediately I prayed so that God would lift that from them. But I also talked to them too. Mm-hmm. And so I think just having the relationship and being for them being able to talk to me, regardless to what it was made it easier for them, a little easier for them. I'm sure it wasn't totally, but it lightened their load a little.
Yeah.
So.
For me, this is Keisha, for me, you know, obviously they were there that night. So I wasn't there when, obviously, you know, when it happened. But as far as when we got married, you know, we dated for a little over 2 years. So, you know, they were accustomed to me being around, you know, and had gotten to know me. And, you know, I definitely tried to create a bond with the both of them, especially our daughter, because I just felt like she was, I felt like she needed a little more at that point, and I felt like it was probably, we just kind of would hang out. We would go, like, different places. She would, you know, talk to me a lot, share a lot of different things with me. I just wanted to make it comfortable for her to know that she could always talk to me. And my husband pretty much talked to his son, our son, all the time. He opened up maybe once or twice with me. But I guess I've made it, you know, clear that I wasn't trying to, you know, be their mom and trying to get the balance right of knowing when to give and when to step back, or, you know, if you're being too much, or it's kind of like this, you know, you don't know when to jump in, but you want to be there, but you don't want to be, you know, like you're trying to be their mom, because no one can replace someone's mother, you know. And I definitely didn't want to come off as if I could ever, you know, fill her shoes, you know. So I never wanted to come off like that. I just wanted to be basically a place of comfort for them where they could, you know, come and talk to me, and they do, you know. They come and talk to me when they need to. They get mad at me. They, you know, they, you know, think I'm unfair. Kind of, you know, the same thing, you know, most parents with teenagers go through. But I do think we definitely have a good relationship, and that they know that they can come and talk to me about anything. We talk about their mom whenever they need to. Sometimes if I can tell that they need to talk, where I can kind of sense it, then, you know, I'll open up the conversation. Or our son, if he, like, we were at the dinner table one night and he said something, and then I was like, okay, I think this is one of those moments. So I went at my husband, I was like, I think Matthew wants to talk. Like, this is a good moment. Like, I think he wants to talk. So, you know, try to just be aware, basically, of, you know, what they're going through, and, you know, and making sure they're healthy, you know, mentally, making sure they're okay.
Exactly. Well, I think I heard our single mom's mentor, Patricia, jump on the line, and Patricia is actually experienced what we're talking about tonight. So, Patricia, I'm going to give you the floor and let you tell our listeners and our guests a little bit about your story.
Hi, ladies.
Hi.
my name is Patricia Taylor, and I'm a mom of three wonderful children, and I'm a widow. I used to be married, and at the time when my husband passed, my son was 4 years old at that time, and my husband had a lung disease. He had fibrosis. So we found out in 2008, and that was the same year our son was born, that we found out that he had that disease. So for my son, I can't really speak for him because I can't even imagine how that could feel. But all the time he knew his father was kind of sick, in and out of the hospitals with different treatments and going through a lot of different things. As for me, as being a mom of a teenager plus a newborn at the time and raising a child, working full time, taking care of a husband, it was a lot to go through. And you just can't even prepare yourself, but not even your child, for that experience, which is a life-changing experience, is how I see it. You just never be the same. It's definitely a life-changing experience. I know for my son, because he was very young, and when it first happened, I explained to him what happened and stuff like that. Every time he went somewhere, he felt like if he saw somebody that looked like his dad, he was like memorized. It's like he just would see his dad all over again. And he'll be staring too. He'd be like, he looks just like my dad, Mom. And I'd be like, yeah, he got some resemblance of your dad and everything. And now it's been 5 years. And sometimes I think he's going to forget, but he never forgets. But I know somebody else was telling me their story, and it was like sometimes you feel like the memory starts to slip away, and they come and they go. You know, grief and just that experience comes in waves. Things, little things make you remember certain things about your other parent or at this time, I remember we were doing this and different things. So it don't all the time hit you all at once, but it do hit you. And sometimes very unexpectedly, even for me, because I had lost them too, I'd be like, when I had turned 41, that was a real hard year for me because he died at 41. And I was just like, oh, my goodness, about to turn the same age my husband left this world, you know. And it's just all these things, and, you know, you live a life, but still emotions come up, different things come up, make you realize and remember them in different ways. Always, you know, try to remember them in good ways. And I try to also help Mrs. Legacy and us as we live in our lives to not forget about him. Which is a little difficult to do sometimes, and not that you forget, but you just want to make his presence known and the things you do as you live in your life every day.
Hello? Now, I would ask all of you ladies, and I know, Keisha, again, you're coming from the other perspective, but I'm sure you're involved with this now since you guys are married. How do you guys keep their memory alive? You know, I know you guys, you know, whenever the kids want to talk about it, you talk about it, and things of that nature, but is there, like, something special you do on the birthday or the death anniversary or every year, so to speak, just to keep that memory alive and to keep it, you know, honor, I guess, you know, as Patricia was saying, like, kind of honor their legacy?
Mm-hmm. Well, the children, they definitely have photos. You know, they keep photos of her around. And for her birthday, they'll have, like, a dinner. And that's pretty much, those are the two things that they do. But I think the more so of like of talking about her is, I think that actually helps them more, you know. So that's how we handle it.
And for me, this is Rhonda. As because they're of their ages now, they actually do their own thing because of their ages now. You know, they all get together and do whatever they're going to do, which is fine. You know, when they were younger, you know, I'd always remind them that that day was their dad's birthday or whatever. And then when they, if they would ask, because his birthday was December the 1st, but then he died on January the 17th. So, you know, so they kind of talk about both of those days from time to time. But because they're older now, I'll let them do whatever they're going to do. You know, I don't want to force them to do anything. But surely when they were growing up, you know, they would always know when his birthday, you know, that acknowledged that it was his birthday, and, you know, I'd remind them and things like that because they were so young when he died that, you know, it wouldn't be something that they would remember at the time. But so now that they're all adults, I let them do whatever they're going to do.
I know for me, my son is 9 now, and we always talk about when his birthday is coming up, and his birthday just passed last month. We'll probably send balloons up to heaven, or if he asks to do something different on his birthday, the memorial of his death, and on Father's Day. Those are like the best, the three days we really acknowledge him, and we may talk about him. We could talk about Dean any time, but those days I may remind him that birthday coming up, he would have been this age. He'll tell me what the things he wouldn't do. Are we doing the balloons? One year we did do, try to do the, not balloons, but the floating.
The light?
Okay.
The floating light?
Yeah, lanterns, and I didn't have enough wind to do the lanterns. Because you need the wind to be at a certain height, but we did do that and had his name on it and a phrase on it. So we may switch it up sometimes, but we do acknowledge him on those days and pay tribute that we remember him and that we miss him and stuff like that. Like I said, my son is 9, so he's still young and everything. And then sometimes we do this video I have and stuff like that. And so we switch it up every now and then, but we definitely acknowledge him on those 3 days when the most important for us.
Now, I would ask Keisha and Patricia, you guys both have children after, so to speak. You know, Keisha, you and your husband have children now.
Well, I was married before, and I have two children from, we don't have children together.
I'm sorry. I'm totally missed that piece.
I do have one child prior to my husband and one child after. Yes.
Right. So how do you blend that situation? Like, you know, when it, maybe he wants to talk about, you know, his dad or when it's the birthday and you're memorializing him on some level, you know, and Keisha, when your bonus kids are talking about their mom or something, you know, how do you work it in with the other kids, I guess?
We don't force anything. We just, I mean, they actually all get along really well. I mean, it's crazy. They hang out with each other. I mean, our 19-year-old, she's, you know, off doing her own thing. But the little ones, they, you know, they all get along really well. And, you know, they talk about they talk about her. They, if they want to, it's we don't make it. We don't make it a thing, but I did explain, you know, to my, to our two little ones, because my daughters, my biological daughters are 11 and 9. So I did have to say, you know, look, they lost their mother, you know, so, you know, you have to be very sensitive, you know, that's a really hard thing to go through, be sensitive of what you say, and, you know, we had that talk, and I still have that talk just to kind of remind them. You know, if I feel like they might are kind of going in a direction to say something crazy or, you know, and not, it's never intentionally, you know, they're just being kids, but, you know, I just kind of pull their coattail a little bit and, you know, hey, that might not be the best thing to say.
yeah, because kids say the darndest
things. But we just keep it open. We keep it open and light and, you know, you know, I don't force them to have, you know, like certain conversations with, about, you know, about if they want to talk about it. Most of the time they reserve that stuff for me and my husband or their grandparents anyway. So they don't really talk about that with the siblings.
And for you, Patricia, you know, do you include the other kids or?
Well, for my oldest, because she's way older and she don't live with me because she's 23, so my kids is a little bit spaced out there. So she does her own thing. But for my son and the little one, because she's only 3, we do incorporate, and, you know, she's 3, so she's talking, so she may ask me different things and stuff like that, and I explain it to her age appropriateness, and she is with me when we're doing, like, the celebrations and stuff like that. Like I said, she's 3, so she probably don't get the full concept of everything, but I have it to her and, you know, age appropriateness, but she is with us during those times.
Okay. So before we end this, you know, amazing show, I want to give each of you an opportunity. If there was something that you would say to another woman in your shoes, you know, what would you say to her? What piece of advice would you give to her for this process? And let's start with Rhonda, I guess.
Okay. I would say to remember to consider their feelings. Make sure that the parent would take, you know, make sure that they were okay. So if they needed to get help or seek help or guidance or counseling or anything, to do that. And also be very attentive to the children and the types of things that they may be going through, if their personality changes or, you know, they start acting out really bad, to just know that they may need more than they can offer and to seek it, and don't be afraid to seek the help.
Mm-hmm. Patricia, what would you say?
I would say, I know for me, I almost felt like I was having a nervous breakdown. I just felt like I had big shoes to fill because my husband was going, I can't do things like how he would do it. And that was, I was having a moment. But definitely you want to keep the an open forum with your kids. Let them know that they could talk about it with you anytime or anybody else that may know their father or whoever they thought would be a good person to talk to, and at any time they can talk about it. And just be open and listen, not so much like, okay, don't want to say this, but judging, but just be open and definitely seek counseling. It's a traumatic thing to go through. You want to just get advice or have a good support system around you during this time for you and your family.
And we'll round it out with Keisha.
So I would say, you know, any woman going into a relationship with a man that lost their spouse, you definitely need a lot of prayer and a lot of patience, because it's a totally different, you know, world that you're entering in, and you just have to be ready and patient with everybody, and try to do everything in love, you know, because, you know, if you've never gone through it yourself, you don't know what the children are going through or what your husband is going through. So patience and prayer and more patience and more prayer.
The two P's we all need anyway, right?
Amen.
Okay, so, you know, it is about that time. But before we end, I want to give each of you an opportunity to just share, you know, where people can find you, where they can connect with you in the future. So let's start with, I guess, Patricia.
My name is Patricia Taylor. I'm on Facebook as Patricia Taylor. On Instagram as Trish Stewart. And that's where you can find me at.
All right. And Ms. Rhonda?
I am Rhonda Braden, and without an H, on Facebook. You have to find Rhonda Braden 5, I think, is what that is. I can't remember. But on Instagram, I am Rhonda Braden. And I also have a website, and that is rhondabraden.com, and Rhonda is spelled without an H.
All right, all right. And Miss Keisha?
You can find me on Instagram at I'm Keisha and Facebook at I'm Keisha, and my website, superwomanly.com.
All right, all right. And, I mean, I'm sure everybody knows, but just in case, you can find her, she, me, your girl, Miss Jennifer Pink, on all social media at Ms. Jennifer Pink, pink like the color. Or you can visit my website at MissPinksWorld.com, because I am out here painting the world pink. Well, I want to thank all of you ladies for joining us this evening and having this tough but very necessary conversation, because, you know, it's part of life. Death happens, and single moms are not, you know, immune to it, and it's definitely something that we have to talk about, and we have to know how to talk to our kids about it. So I want to thank all of you ladies for joining me this evening and really giving a voice to this situation.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Jennifer.
Oh, no problem, no problem. Well, look at that. The time has just flown by. It's almost time to say goodbye. But before we do, I want to make sure that all of you follow Sage Network on at Sage Mentoring on all social media platforms, and check out our website at sagesinglemoms.net. But it is time to go, so I want to thank all of our sponsors, listeners, and, of course, our network family. We have so many amazing shows for all of you to listen to. Make sure you stay connected to Sage Network by liking, following, hearting us on all social media at Sage Mentoring. And until next week, stay safe, avoid the drama, and raise them babies. Good night.
Goodbye.
Good night.
It's a journey, sacrifice, but I wouldn't trade it in for my